What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode is going to be very draft heavy. We're going to talk about options at number 6 and options at number 18, even some options at number 40. But we're also going to dive into some other stuff, some draft buzz, whether Konka Nipple should be the pick at 6, whether it should be Maluak, and maybe why it shouldn't be those guys. How can the Wizards trade up to number 3? How can they possibly trade back? All of that and more in the upcoming show. And who better to bring on than my guy Damo, who knows his stuff, knows the draft definitely a lot more than I do. So you know, I'm gonna give some of my takes, but Damo's gonna hopefully help out with some takes of his own as well. So thank you for coming on, Damo. Appreciate it.
Man, I appreciate the invite and man and that warm intro there, man. That you're far too kind, man.
it's all good. So I want to start the pot off with a scenario. I kind of just want to get right into how I think, or I think as consensus thinks, the top four are going to go. You know, Flag will go 1. It's pretty apparent that Dylan Harper will go 2. Any combination of Ace Bailey and Edgecombe 3-4, I think if it doesn't go in that order in the top four, it'd be pretty surprising to most people who have been plugged into the draft. So let's just tuck that away. Whatever order it goes in, those guys are off the board. You're the Wizards. You're sat at number 6, right? Obviously, there's the hurdle of Utah at number 5, and they can take someone you want. But let's say whoever you want will still be on the board at number 6. Of the remaining lot, of the remaining prospects, who is that guy that you would want to be there at 6 for the Wizards to take?
Yeah, so I think if – I think in a perfect world, just looking at just how this roster is currently built and who the front office has kind of identified – since they've been here, you know, 2023, they moved up. They got Bilal, point of attack, wing defender. Last year, we got lucky and was able to stay at 2, and Sarr didn't want to play for the Hawks. So we got a paint disruptor, your anchor there. I think you have to go offense with this pick, somebody that they can kind of be a hub and run your offense through. So I think in a perfect world, they're hoping Trey Johnson is there. But if he's not, then, and I know people don't like the fit, but I would go Derek Queen. That's what I would personally do, because I just think just following the board just on talent as far as an offensive creator, skill level in the half court, I don't think there's too many guys in this class better than him. So that's what I would do.
Now, you mentioned fit and more so with Queen. And what's crazy to me is all the people that have told me that the Wizards should draft Queen have just screamed fit. Like, he might not be more talented than Johnson or Fears, but they like the pairing of him and Sarr in that front court, kind of what Queen can't do well, Sarr can do well, and vice versa. How do you foresee if they drafted Queen, you know, he would work out as a duo with Sarr in that front court?
Yeah, and that's the thing where, to me, I think the fit is actually excellent. I think we're one of the few teams in that lotto range that I think he would slide in perfectly, because in Sarr, you watch him all year. I know he's listed as a center, but when you watch him play, he doesn't play like a center. He plays against big bodies. He doesn't really have the girth and strength to kind of defend well there. I think he's best suited as kind of like a help defender. Kind of like how OKC uses Chet. Like, Chet is one of the best rim protectors in the league, but he does it by kind of playing a free safety role. He gets to roam. And he has the foot speed to be able to guard the perimeter. So you put a Hartenstein next to him. Hartenstein is guarding the big body guys. He's going up against the Nikola Jokic and the Embiids and the, you know, the big guys that's 250 plus. And then you let Chet kind of roam on the forward, and he can weak side shot block. And then he can grab it off the rim and he can push the break for you. And then you see Sarr, he shot 5 threes a game this year as a rookie. Like, he does not want to play center. That's obvious in the way that he approaches the game and his mentality. I feel like he's more likely to run to the 3-point line than he is to catch a lob, right? And, you know, I guess it's up to the Wizards on whether or not that's something they want to change, or if they feel like, okay, this is what he wants to be, we're going to develop that. But as it is now, I think you slide Queen next to him. Queen, to me, is a face-up power forward. He's a throwback power forward, you know, of the old – you know, late 90s, early 2000s, where you were playing two bigs, essentially. You know, the Tim Duncan era, as I would call it, where he's going to face you up from about 20 feet in. He's too strong for the modern day five forward that you're going to put on him, you know, but he's also too quick for the big centers. And I just think his skill level, man, like his footwork out of the post, facing up, the Euro steps and like the little one-legged fades, and then his passing, like he passes so well. I think he's one of the five best passers in this draft. At 6'10", 250. So I just love his skill level, man. I think, and then defensively, I think he has enough mobility to switch. Obviously, he's not a rim protector. He's never going to be that. But I think, again, with Sar here, I think it makes sense, man.
I think you make some great points. That the inability, I guess, of Queen to kind of get off the floor, and he had some blocks at Maryland, but the inability to kind of contest some shots, and obviously that's a difference. But against, you know, paired up with Sar, I don't know how much he'll have to do that. He can kind of be your bruiser to take on, you know, a bruising four or five down low while Sar can roam. I'm glad you also mentioned that the two big lineups that have become prevalent in this playoffs. I've loved it. I love the two big lineups. But what I see a lot of times is they're kind of different bigs. Like you said, Chet can kind of roam while Hartenstein can kind of play more so in the post. You have Jared Allen and Mobley in Cleveland. They're kind of different players in their own rights, where Mobley can also guard other positions, whereas it's probably preferable if Allen's kind of parked in the paint as that rim protector, and they play very well off each other. I'm glad you mentioned it, because while I agree with Queen and how he could be a good fit, there's also another center from Duke, Kaman Malawak, that has been talked about. From following you, I'm pretty sure what I've glared is that you would not want to take him at six.
Yeah.
But kind of, if you can, dive into why Queen and Sar work so well, or you think they would work so well, versus why you wouldn't necessarily buy that fit with Sar and Malawak.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just not sold on Malawak's offense. Because, again, just looking at where the team is now, the pedigree and what we've drafted, Bilal, defender first, offense later, kind of got to develop that. Sar, defender first, offense needs development. This would be the third draft in a row that you would take that type of player. And I think at some point you got to get serious about scoring the basketball. You watch the Indiana Pacers, you watch the Knicks. I mean, these Final Four teams, they play defense, but you got to put the ball in the hoop. You got to have somebody that has some type of gravity in the half court. And I just worry about what type of pressure that puts on Sar, and where you would need him to jump to offensively if you're going to pair him next to Malawak, who literally just started playing basketball 6 years ago. Defensively, I think it would be amazing. Like, because in a way that Jared Allen and Evan Mobley is, where you have Malawak in the paint, he's your rim protector. Sar can roam, play the forward, play switch like Mobley does. And then he can also weak side shot block. Like defensively, I think it would be amazing. I just think on the other side of the floor, especially when the Wizards, I don't think have their point guard of the next decade here, a guy like a Haliburton or even a Darius Garland level player that's going to go get you 8-9 assists a night and can give your bigs easy kind of spoon-fed buckets at the rim. We don't have that. So I think in a half-court situation with Malawak, Sar, and then Bilal, offensively, that's going to look really, really bad. And I don't want to watch that for 82 games, but I can understand why, you know, if you believe in Malawak developing offensively, for sure, it would be a no-brainer because his measurables are crazy.
Yeah, I think the defense is kind of what people like. You know, the wingspan is outrageous. The measurables are crazy. And how skilled he is for pretty much, I think you mentioned, just starting to play the sport. Like, it's easy to see why you could buy that development trajectory of, yeah, the defense is there and he could get bigger, he could get lankier, and the offense could grow. I've seen a lot of people saying that he could be a stretch too, because I think he went like 12 of 25 on like the wide open threes at the combine. Come on, guys. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not a great basketball player, but like, it's wide open. Like, certain people that don't even play the sport can do that. So
yeah.
I understand that. I think he made four threes at Duke if that's correct.
I think he had four total.
He doesn't shoot the ball, and that's okay. Like, people have to stop shipping him as the stretch five. He could be that, but that's a ways away. And I like you mentioned, the spacing would be catastrophic. I mean, Bilal could add a 3-point shot, but that's going to take some time too. Sarr is a willing shooter. He took 5 a game, but it was about 30%. So it's not like people are necessarily respecting him yet. I think that if you're drafting a guy at 6, I don't know if you're necessarily drafting him to be off your bench. I think if they took Malawak, they could kind of envision a Sarr and Malawak front court. And I understand that for defensive purposes. But defense can only take you so far. You need offense. Like I mentioned, this is a team that 30th in offensive efficiency and rating last year, 27th in points per game. They need scoring help. And I think, like you mentioned, at 5, like, or 6, Trey Johnson is a guy that can definitely get that for you. Jeremiah Fears is also someone it's intriguing in terms of someone that's only 18 still, can create his own shot, can create for others as well. There's efficiency issues. He'll get in the air a lot of times and just turn the ball over for no reason. There's a big path of trajectory there, but he's still very young. I'm curious, what would your thoughts be if Washington made that the pick at 6? Could you get behind that, or is that somebody that you're not as high on?
Yeah, I'm probably not as high on Fears as consensus is. I wouldn't have him top 6 or top 8 on my board. He would be kind of at the bottom of Lotto or maybe just outside of it. I'm just not a fan of his style of play. Like, I love that he gets to the rim. I love that he gets in the paint, but he doesn't finish. And he's very high turnover. It's like, and then he does shoot great from the free throw line, but he doesn't, everywhere else is kind of below average. So to me, what he looks like is like a high volume, high usage, small guard that, yeah, he has the will to kind of, wheel buckets, but I just don't think he's ever going to be like an efficient player in the NBA. So it's almost like I'm projecting like Trae Young, but not as good a passer, nowhere near as good a passer, nowhere near as good a shooter. So it's like, what type of player is that? Because Trae Young is barely a player that I want to build around. So in Jeremiah Fears, it's like, I don't know. But if they took him, I can understand the thinking, because it's like they want ball pressure. We know they want a Dylan Harper. So they want a guard that can get into the paint and create for the guys that they have on the court, that they've drafted. And it's definitely a need. We need somebody that can kind of be a gravity player, can be our version of Halliburton, be our version of Cade Cunningham. But I'm not sure Jeremiah Fears is that player.
That's valid. I think what you just said is kind of the side against Fears, and I think you encapsulated it pretty well in terms of like, yeah, he could be a guy that could go out and score the ball and get everyone going, but you turn around on the opposite end, and I'm probably going to be attacking a guy of his build. I mean, he's very skinny. And most guys in the draft are. That's kind of a huge thing. Like, everyone kind of needs to get stronger. It's a different level of strength and physicality in the NBA. But he's pretty skinny, and he's got to grow and mold into that. And if I'm looking at him now, I'm just going to attack him on the defensive end. And if he can't really produce too much for me on that other end, it begs the question of do I want to draft a guy like that high? But like you mentioned, the upside that he has, he's still only 18. The Wizards clearly are in the market for a guy that can, handle the ball and take over some more offensive responsibilities. I'd get that. And you said you could get behind it as long, like you'd have him kind of towards the back end of your lottery. And that kind of leads me into my other question is, if you're at 6 and the Wizards, is there a prospect that they take and you're just simply like, I can't get behind this. There's no reason that you should have taken him with the talent on the board. Is there anybody in that realm that you would just be out on?
Yeah, I'll give you 3.
Go for it. 3 is better than 1, so go for it.
I'll give you 3. So Malawash would be one of them. I just don't see offensively him ever developing enough to pair with Sarr and Bilal. So that to me, like, I feel like long term it could work, but it might mean one of those other two might need to be on the move. Mm-hmm. I would say Khan, Kanopu. I think he's going to be a fine player. It's just not, I don't, to maximize him here, you need a gravity player, and we don't have one. And so the idea of us losing 64 games to go and draft a guy to me that I think on the NBA level is going to be more of a complimentary player, a great complimentary player. But how many complimentary players are we going to keep drafting and putting on this roster? So that would be two. And then the third would probably be Kaz out of Illinois. Like, I just don't see the – for him to be a point guard, I don't see the space creation. I don't see where he separates enough. Like, every time he comes down the court, he needs a screen just to get past a big man. I'm like, the athletes don't get weaker when you go to the NBA. So, I don't think he's a point guard. A starting point guard on the NBA level. Maybe he's like kind of like a do-it-all wing and kind of more secondary, and he can do some things in a pinch. But I think if you're drafting him to be your full-time point guard, I think you're going to be disappointed.
It's a great point. I had Jakob Jonas as well out of Illinois. That was my – I couldn't get behind it. If you asked me in non-conference play, then I'd understand it. But when he entered Big Ten play, as somebody who like goes to school at Penn State and watched a lot of Illinois, it was a whole different animal for him. Different type of physicality.
So you know.
I know. Like he couldn't – not that he couldn't meet the moment, but I don't think he could meet the competition. And I think he's a very good player, and he could be good on another team. Maybe it's like a career backup guard, you know, coming off the bench. I could see that. But as my everyday point guard at number six, like that's not somebody that I would take, especially with Fears there. Like as long – you know, even if you don't like Fears as a prospect, I think he's better than Jakob Jonas. I think there's other options there. Like, I'd even take Carter Bryant, who's 10 on my board. I'd take him over Jakob Jonas. Like, there's a lot more options there. So, like, I understand if the Wizards are at 18, he falls to you at 18, then sure, go for it by any means. But if it's me at six, I think that's the pick that I couldn't get behind. And I understand Malawak as well in terms of the fit. We kind of touched on that earlier. You mentioning Khan is great because I had a whole kind of segment dedicated to Khan later, but let's just move it up to this part of the show because I completely – I'm behind you with your perspective. Like, Khan is great if you're Philadelphia, right? If you are
a team
that is jumped in. And that's why I think a trade-up could be beneficial because Philly would be ridiculed, right, if they took him at three when Bailey and Edgecombe were there. But if they move back, pick up another first, and can still take him at six when I think he'll still be there, that's a great fit. Even San Antonio, like, they're going to take Harper. But if they trade back and get Khan, that makes sense. But for a team like Washington, like you're not losing all these games to draft another complimentary player. And I say this as somebody, I have Khan as six on my board. I think he's a phenomenal prospect. I think he's way more polished than people think. I've seen Corey Kispert comps, which make no sense. Like, I understand he's a white boy that can shoot. He's a really good shooter.
He's so much better in this
class, but he can put the ball on the deck. Like when Cooper Flagg wasn't playing well, it was Khan that was facilitating offense. And kind of getting his own shot. He can make tough shots. He can make down, you know, knock down threes as well. But he's a lot better than most people, I think, give him credit for. But all that being said, right, if he's at six, I'm still taking somebody else probably just because I think, like, as I'm a best player available person always, but there's just – it doesn't make too much sense for me or for the Wizards for them to draft somebody, like you said, that's a complimentary player. Like, you can only continue to stack so many complimentary players to where – who's getting them the ball? Who's making them really good complimentary players? I don't know if the Wizards have that. You know, Poole is okay, but I don't know how long he's going to be in Washington. So if you want to, like, expand maybe on exactly why, even if Khan's there and you think he's a great prospect, why he wouldn't be your pick at six if he's there.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's really more so about just the makeup of the team because I have no issue with Khan as six on the board. Right. Like, because I think talent wise, productivity, his shooting, the way he plays in space, the way he plays without the ball. Like, I think he's going to come in day one and hit the ground running as a rookie and be productive. I just again, for what the team we're trying to build, I think at some point you got to get serious about finding your gravity player, a guy you can run offense through. And I don't think Khan is ever going to be that. I think he's going to be an excellent complimentary shooter. Spacer can do some playmaking, can run a little bit of pick and roll, play off of somebody, just like how he played off a Flag at Duke. You get him on a team like Houston, right? Like you said, the Sixers, even the Pelicans, because they have Trey Murphy, they have Zion there, who's a elite rim pressure player. He would be perfect there, perfect player to go there. Just for the Wizards, I wouldn't do it. Because then I feel like you're then kicking the can down the road as far as finding a guy that can be a true franchise gravity player for you, and they need to get that like ASAP. Mm. Now, if Dawkins and Winger got some like trade in the works or got a player they feel like can be that, you know, if they think Jonathan Kuminga can be Jaylen Brown or the next coming of Jimmy Butler, and they like, all right, that's the player we've identified. We're going to bring him in. Let's go ahead and take Khan. This is the type of roster we want to build. Okay, I'll ride with it. I may not agree, but I'll ride with it. But I don't think you draft Khan saying, yeah, that's our guy. He's going to be our number one, number two option. That would be crazy to me.
Yeah, well said. I think, like you mentioned, if there is a plan and they want to bring someone in, I mean, they identified Kuminga. I mean, if you watch last night's Knicks game, Benedict Mathurin and Jairus Walker just like don't really play. And when Mathurin does, he doesn't play well. You know, it's possible that they make a splash move and they want to dump those guys. And maybe Mathurin is someone that the Wizards could try to recycle and rekindle that career as a former top 10 pick. There are guys that they could pick out and then kind of say, we want to build our roster around them. But I've also seen Dawkins kind of wants his own guys. I think it's tough, right, when you don't get lucky. Like, you can't draft one of those guys when you're always drafting, you know, at six. And when you get the second pick, it's not the greatest draft class, and it's tough. But I think I could foresee that if they take Khan, they kind of got to have another plan for most Wizards fans to get behind it. I think you're right in that thinking. And you mentioned in that talk that you were looking at a trade up, right? If they have a move to trade up and take someone else, we can just dive into that, because I've been on Fansbo for a while, trying to cook up trades, because the Sixers trade is tough. Like, there's so many moving pieces. They have so much money in their top three guys that it's tough to even find other pieces to move. I have three different moves here that the Wizards can make. But as somebody, I know you're really high on Ace. That would be a move that you definitely want to look at if you're you and you're looking at your draft board, right? Have you looked at any moves with the Sixers? And if so, what do you think would be your best package that you could offer Philly to move up?
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm definitely a fan of Ace. I don't know if I'm a big enough fan where I'm taking Paul George money. Because that's 3 years, $160 million remaining, I believe. Mm-hmm. Because literally all the flexibility that you acquired by moving off of Bradley Beal and his no trade clause, you basically put it right back on your bill by taking that Paul George contract. And yeah, it to move up three spots, I'm not doing that. I feel like it would be less of a risk trying to go get number two, and making a play for the Spurs pick versus trying to have dealing with Daryl Morey. We know he's a slickster, man. I don't trust Daryl Morey, so I'm not doing no business with Philly. Honestly, I don't even think there's really a deal to be had with them where you're not coming out on the bad part of the deal.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned I don't know if there's a good deal, because I want to see if you think my deals are good. And also, you mentioned the Beal comparison. I figured you would mention that, or at least I would, because I brought up their comparisons, right? Because I've seen a lot of Philly fans saying, you know, we don't want to give up Paul George. As somebody that I live in this area, and most of my friends and stuff are Sixers fans, like, they think Paul George is this great player that the Wizards would have to give up picks for. And I just like, then I'd ask, what do you think of Bradley Beal? And they'd be like, oh, worst contract in the league, making $50 million a year. He's awful on both ends. And then I'd pull up the stats, and it's kind of like, well, Beal had a decent season, not the best for $50 million, but it's kind of better than Paul George's. I mean, Beal averaged 17 points per game to PG 16.2. Paul George averaged 0.7 more turnovers per game. If you look at, you know, their shooting splits and percentages, Brad shot better from every aspect of the field to Paul George. Like, Brad played 12 more games. They played the same amount of minutes. Both of their teams were awful. Like, if you're really looking at it, it's kind of like you said, I'm going to take back a Bradley Beal type contract, and I'm going to give you other assets. So here's one, and I have two different Paul George trades, I guess. The first one involves the Wizards taking back Paul George, who is 3 years left on his deal. He's due $51.6 million for this season. Like you mentioned, I believe it's $160 million over the next 3 years. And Washington also gets the third pick, which in turn, I would assume they take Ace Bailey with, right? Right. And then you turn around, you say, okay, well, what do the Wizards give up? They give up Chris Middleton, $34 million. He'll opt in. That's expiring. Marcus Smart, $21 million. That's expiring. They'll also give up pick number 18 and pick number 40 in order to move up. Is that something that you'd cover? You have three, you have six, but you're taking back that Paul George. I know this is my best one. I want to start off well. What do you think about that trade? Would you accept it or would you want to renegotiate?
So we're giving up. So we're giving them six, 18,
The Wizards are keeping six. They're giving up 18, we keep 40. Six. Keep six.
Oh, 18, okay. 40, okay. All right.
and Middleton and Smart.
Okay.
To take back Paul George's contract. So you still keep six, right? You can take Con at six if you want. Take Ace Bailey at three. But you're also taking back one of the worst contracts in the league, giving up two expiring deals that I don't think you really care about too much. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Man. Okay, so we're giving them 18, 40, Smart, and Middleton, and we get PG in number three.
Yeah.
Ooh, well, we get to keep six. So we would have, that's tough, man.
That's good. That means that I did a decent job because you're thinking about it, so I'm happy with myself.
I would consider that one, but I still probably wouldn't do it. I just think your flexibility over the next 3 years is cooked. It's because then you're gonna have to find a way to dump Paul George. You're gonna do at least 2 years on that because that's a 3 year deal, guaranteed money. You're gonna have to eat at least 2 years of that. So then it's like, okay, when the hell do we get competitive? Like we're not even competitive. Mm-hmm. We're not even really building a team yet until after that Paul George deal is moved. So that means now you're kicking the can down the road at least another 2 years. And I don't think they want to do that. I think they're trying to be players in that summer 26, summer 27. And Paul George would nix all of that. So I think it would be a no. But you would think about it.
That's fair. Let me ask this. Is there anything in terms of renegotiating that you would want from Philly? Or is it kind of like you would need to legitimately give me the best offer possible in order for me to kind of remove all my flexibility that I have and take on this disgruntled asset?
I mean, I would ask. They're going to say no, but I'm like, hey, throw McCain in there.
Why not?
Why not, man? Why not? Throw McCain in there. I'd do it for that. Mm-hmm. I'd do it for that. But
that's other fair. Than that, no. Yeah. The other one I had, and this is just based on if Drummond opts in to his option. I seen Ad Marinson, who's a Sixers beat reporter. He was doing a bunch of trades, and it seemed like for all of them, Drummond was involved. So, again, I don't know why Drummond would opt in to $5 million to get traded to the Wizards. Doesn't make too much sense. But in this hypothetical world, let's say he does, it would be number six, the 2026 first-round pick that we got in the Jared Butler trade, and Sadiq Bey to Philadelphia for number three and Andre Drummond. So you're basically swapping Drummond for Bay in terms of salaries. Bay $6.5 million, Drummond $5 million. Drummond's expiring. Bay still got, I believe, two more years on his deal. And then the Wizards to move up three spots are obviously taking on Drummond's deal. But the pick that they got in 26 from the Jared Butler trade, they're kind of just sending it back to Philly, giving them another asset to move if they want to make an in-season trade. Is that something that you would do?
Yeah, this one I would consider. But again, it's gotta be. Again, on the front office, how much they like Ace Bailey.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems like from what I've been reading, a lot of the evaluators kind of, after the top two, they feel like 3 through 8 is very similar tier. Because not everybody is buying into Ace Bailey's upside. I would, especially on the Wizards, because I think the team he goes to is going to matter too. For his own career arc and how he develops. But yeah, I think I would probably do that deal. Because again, I think Ace Bailey has a chance to be a star. So
yeah,
I would do that deal.
I figured, you know, knowing how much that you're, you know, big on Ace Bailey, and obviously all of this depends right on, do they think he's that type of prospect? Do they think that they're willing to give up, you know, this first round pick that they acquired to move up three spots? I think it's a great deal for the Wizards if they like Ace like that. But again, if they don't and they view him as pretty similar to some of the other prospects, I'm fine sticking at six. I like Sadiq Bey as a player. Now, I don't know if he's a part of this future. He's still relatively young. But again, giving up that first round pick next year, like that could be pretty useful It's a decent draft class, and the Wizards obviously need as many chances as they can to draft someone that they can lead this team. So me personally, I'm not that high on Ace in order to make a trade like that. I think I'd rather stay put. But again, for someone like you and if the Wizards view Ace Bailey like you do, and he's a kind of, we need this guy right now and he can really develop under our system, I think that's a decent move for them. And that's kind of the first of the two trade-ups. The second one involves number two, and this one is a lot more difficult. Obviously, it's a decently big drop-off for most evaluators from, like, obviously Cooper Flagg up here, and then you got Dylan Harper, and then you kind of drop a little bit to the rest of the class where you're Baileys right. And Edgecombs. I think that's kind of consensus. A move up to two is going to take a lot, and I don't know how many first-round picks the Wizards want to give, but I know from Wizards Twitter, and I believe my guy Oz proposed this in multiple group chats on him in and all over Twitter. He's kind of been shopping this, so I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
He was going with Bilal Coulibaly and right. Pick number six to San Antonio for pick number two. Me personally, I don't want to give up on Bilal that easily. I think Dylan Harper's a tremendous prospect. That's not something that I would be willing to do. I think you're reaching a little bit just because you got unlucky in the lottery. Like, you'll still have a top eight protected pick. It's a great draft class next year. You could still get a really good player. You're probably going to suck again to get that pick. I'd be willing to kind of wait and take my chances instead of reaching and giving up this guy looking below that I think could be great, just because I think Dylan Harper, who's also still, by the way, unproven, right? You think he could be really good. He's not that good yet. And I've seen some skills from Bilal that would warrant me wanting to keep him, especially on defense. So I'm curious, is sure. that a move that you'd even consider? And kind of what are your thoughts on that package?
It's definitely a move I consider, no doubt about it. Because I believe foreshadowing here. I believe Dylan Harper is that good. I think he's Cade level. I think in most drafts, he goes number one. Definitely last year, he goes number one. Not even close. It's just that he's in the draft class with Cooper Flagg. But Dylan Harper, to me, is a number one level prospect. So, and I like Bilal. I was a fan of him draft day. That's who I wanted out of the guys where we were picking. I think he projects more as like a Jaden McDaniels. So if you're looking at, would you trade Jaden McDaniels to try to get Cade Cunningham? I would. Kay Cunningham is an All-NBA player. He's only 23 years old? Yeah, I would do that. So if that's what it took, six and Bilal to get two, I'm making that move. And also because we have Kai here, you have Kai George, that kind of looks like you might have hit on that pick in the 20s.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of picks that you need to hit on to give you leverage to be able to make deals like this. Because if that's just a throwaway pick, or say you trade that pick for the worst Holiday brother, for example, you don't have that leverage, right? You don't have that young guy that shows promise that you got in the 20s with a bonus pick that gives you the flexibility to move off other valuable assets to get your start. So, yeah, I would definitely consider that deal. I think I had proposed one to my guy over there with the Spurs. I think I did Bilal 6 and Corey Kispert for number 2 and Harrison Barnes expiring.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely consider that. Because I think Harper is that good. I think he's a number one draft pick in any other class.
That's fair. I like the Cade comp. I think that's kind of been what I've seen a lot as well in terms of just the bigger guard that could do a lot in terms of pretty much everything for your team, facilitating your offense, won't be a liability on defense like some point guards. So I would understand it. And that's a move that I wouldn't like be up in arms about. Like, I would understand they want a star. Dylan Harper is that good. And I think he will be that good. I'm glad you mentioned the Holiday trade. I mean, they got Isaiah Todd too. So we could talk about that, but it's better when I mentioned this with Keyshawn last year, like you want to draft, I guess those not role players, but a 3-and-D guy at 25 is much better than you know, trying to reach on a draft and stash guy like they did at 52 with like Yannick and Zosa. Like, take the guy that you know has a high floor, might not have the greatest ceiling, but is going to be solid for you. That's kind of what you're looking at. And I think it kind of segues into 18. And 18 is a little higher up. It's right outside the lottery versus 26. They moved up to 24 to get George. who are some prospects you're looking at 18? Because a lot of the ones that I've seen are, they're not going to be your star players. But you also say that, you know, Sengun was right there. I'm pretty sure he was the 18th pick. And he is all NBA. I don't know if he's all NBA this year or he just missed it.
He just missed it. He was all star.
Yeah. All star, leader of that Houston team for a lot of the playoffs. You can find someone like that there. Who are the 2, 3, 4 prospects that you're kind of targeting in that range? You know, obviously if the Wizards don't move up from that spot.
Yeah, I would say probably number one for me would be Demon out of BYU. Mm-hmm. 6'9" point guard. He's been apparently shooting the lights out in workouts and in drills. And even though he hasn't shot it well in games after probably like November, it was just like he cratered. That would probably be one. But some of this too can depend on where they go at six, what they do at the top of the draft. Because if they go guard top of the draft, I don't think they're going to go Denman there at 18. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of this pick to me is going to be kind of complementary to what they do at the top of the draft. So, you know, if they go big man at six, then I could see them in there at 18. If they go maybe forward or wing with the sixth pick, then I could see maybe another forward or even a big here. I like Sorber out of Georgetown too. He has the measurables that Malawash has, but I think he has more post skill. So I like the idea of him. I think he would pair well with Sar, give you some versatility if you want to put him next to Sar, or they can alternate at the five. And then I would probably say Fleming. I just think his length, man. And his athleticism, you just got to believe in that you can get him to shoot it on an NBA level. Because if you can, then you got another Swiss Army knife at forward that can guard 1 through 5, can switch everything, can push the break, and you hope can have some projectable offense that, you know, he can be a two-way player for you.
Seems it's a pretty forward-heavy lineup. That's kind of what I've seen in this range. I picked out like 4 or 5 guys and they were all forwards for some reason. I don't know if that's just this range dominated by that build. But you mentioned like Fleming's length and his size, and if he can stretch the floor, it's all these things that you're kind of looking for in a guy that you want to draft in that range. Sorber as well, with some of the rim protection that he showed. Obviously the ability to score in the post, where, you know, an area Sar was limited in, and I'm not saying he can develop that, but you know, wasn't the strongest part of his game, I'd say, and can definitely develop. But Sorber showed that in a bunch of games as well. There was a game against Providence where it was arguably, I think it was 25 and 12 against Providence on the road. One of the better games that I'd seen from him. So that's definitely an option there too. With Demon, like, he's been flying up. You mentioned if he's there at 18, I think I would take him. Even if I took a guard at six, like I think I'm still buying the 6'9" forward who can kind of do a lot for me. The playmaking as well, I think I'd still take him. I don't think he'll be there. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's dominated by forwards for some reason. And I think, like, if you take a guard at six, you're kind of set up because you don't want to take another guard ideally at 18, but there's a bunch of forward options there for you to take. There's Noah Sange from France that kind of is a Dawkins type prospect, like lanky forward that has offensive upside, switchability and versatility on defense, from France. Obviously he likes the French players, but again, there's a lot of question marks there with him in terms of everything, honestly, in his game. Like, nothing's too polished with him, I feel. But the build is there. In Bilal, when he was, you know, coming into the league, wasn't the best at anything other than you knew he'd be a pretty solid defender, and he's developed into a really decent defender, but there's obviously still those question marks. So that could be a wild card there at 18 if Assange has decent workouts and all that stuff in the pre-draft process. I want to kind of round it out with your draft maybe sleeper. I know that you were a guy that was really high on Jalen Williams, and I mean, he just made All-NBA. So shout out to you, because that was a really good call. You wanted him at 10. You were screaming it. It's unfortunate that you weren't in the front office. Tommy Shepard was. He made that pick. Who knows what would be different about this team? Like, maybe Beal would still be in DC, who knows? But it feels like you kind of have your guy in each draft. From following along with you, you had Jalen Williams. Like, you have the guy that you're really high on in each draft, that consensus might not be as high on. do you have a guy in this draft that fits that category? And if so, who is that guy?
Yeah, I can't say that I have that guy because I don't see a Jalen Williams guy that's kind of you know in the 20s or barely first round that I have a top 10 grade on. Mm-hmm. This was a guy that I was just talking about on Twitter earlier. Is the kid? I don't know why his last name is escaping me. Cedric Howard.
Yeah,
Cedric Howard. Yeah, he's been flying up boards. But I don't see him being a top 10 prospect. He's just more kind of like a 3-and-D, got great measurables. I'll tell you who I've been diving into recently that he's an older guy, but I really like his game. And that's the kid Yaxel out of
UAB.
UAB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's tough.
I like his game, man. I really like this guy. I would not be shocked if he was one of those guys in this class that gets picked in the, you know, 15 to 25 range, and he ends up one of the best players in the class. I really like his tape, man.
I love that you mentioned him. He's so talented. He's triple-double guy. Like, he can kind of do it everywhere. On UAB, probably not going to be talked about as much. Like, Cedric Howard on Washington State, again, not going to be talked about as much, but it's nice to see when you get to the combine and everyone's kind of in the same realm, center stage. These guys start flying up boards. You saw with Jalen Williams, Santa Clara, not the biggest school, but then he has, you know, great pre-draft process and he's flying up boards. I mean, Coward committed to Duke and he was going to play there if he didn't, but he decided, I'm going to go to the draft. I think that means to me that either he has a promise already from a team or
sure.
he knows something. Like, I had a great combine. I'm going to stay with it. I'm going to be top 20 for sure. If he falls to 18, like, I think that's a great pick for Washington, a nice 3-and-D guy, could pair well with Sarr. And I think that's kind of what I'm looking at for a forward. Like, you just drafted this guy, Alex Sarr, number 2 last year. I'm definitely in the realm of let's find someone that can pair with him. And again, I am always a best player available. But sometimes when you have the foundation, you kind of want to look at, okay, how can this guy play? It's the same thing with Malawak. Like, he could be one of the better prospects in this class, but does he fit well with Sarr? Probably not. So I don't know if you want to take him that early, but there's definitely some options at 18 for me. And this might be a little bit surprising. Nolan Traer is kind of the guy that I've circled, and it's tough to like explain it. Just like watching him, his effort level is something that I like enjoy watching. He's a guy that's always given a maximum effort. That's something that I think is important to me in the pre-draft process. The defense I think is there. The versatility at his size to guard multiple positions is there. The shooting is not. The offense is not. I completely understand that. But at 18, like, I'm fine if some of my guys are gone, taking a flyer on. I mean, this is a guy that was projected top 3, top 4 about a year ago. He didn't have a great season. He didn't have a great season. I understand that. But I'm buying the defense as someone, you know, Will Dawkins is big on that. I'm buying the kind of size he could bring to the guard position. And hopefully that offense sort of develops. But that's someone I'd be willing to take a flyer on. Unconventional. He's, you know, more so in the back end of the first round, which is surprising to me. I understand it. But that's someone that I'd be willing to take a flyer on in terms of some sleepers and stuff. Is there a bust? And I'll end it out with this. We kind of just mentioned our sleepers. Is there a guy that consensus has in like top 5, top 10, top 15, and you can't get behind it? You don't know why people are talking about him like that. You're not as high on that prospect. Is there someone for you in this class?
Yeah, I would probably say CMB, Kyler Murray.
That's mine too.
I'm not seeing it, man. I think he's a good college player. But I feel like I've seen these Grant Williams types, like, you know, you look at the advanced numbers, they kind of stat sheet stuffers. You know, they kind of get the keys in college and they just get to do a lot of stuff. But in the NBA, like, watching him shoot at the combine, I was like, hell no. It's just no way. He's not gonna get that off in the league, man. Like, I mean, I've seen people compare him to Julius Randle. I'm like, Julius Randle was an All-American man child, like scoring 30 regularly. When he went to Kentucky, it was nothing for him to get double doubles. So I don't see that with him. I think he would be fine if you had him in that 20s range as a guy that can come in and kind of do a little bit. Be a scrappy guy, role player, but you drafting him top 10, I think you will be disappointed.
I'm glad you said that. That was my guy as well. Just like an undersized, you know, I guess four. He kind of played center in college.
He's really like an undersized center to me because
he's
not really even a four. He's like a center that's 6'7".
Yeah, he's not like athletic enough or quick enough for me to be like, I want to play him at the forward. He's not tall enough to play him at center. I don't know what the comp for him is. I don't know what I'm looking at. Like maybe with a guy like Sarr, it's a decent pairing. But again, like, if you're at six, take Queen. If you really want someone like that, Derek Queen's so much more skilled, way better player than him. If you're at 18, like I'm taking Sorb, I'm taking Fleming, I'm taking these guys, Coward, over CMB. I have him at like 22 on my board. Yeah. I've seen people having him as high as five, and I don't get
I've seen him as high as three, man. I've seen him as high
ridiculous.
As
three. Three's ridiculous. Like, I'm not even that high on Bailey, but I mean, to put someone like him above Bailey is ridiculous, even Edgecombe and Johnson. But I'm glad we're kind of aligned on that. The final thing that I ask, and I appreciate you coming on as always and sharing your knowledge, is if you had to make a prediction for six, let's say Washington stays put there, who do you think the pick is? And that's based on who you believe Utah will take as well, who you believe will be there. But who do you think the Wizards come out of this draft with at six?
Oh man! All right, I'm gonna make a bold prediction here.
All right, go for it.
Because I don't think the consensus five is going to be the consensus five. Mm-hmm. Right? So obviously, we know Flagg is gonna go one, Harper is gonna go two. I think Trey Johnson is gonna go three.
Wow!
I think Malawach is gonna go four.
Okay.
And then I think Denman is going to go five to Utah.
Wow. So you're saying that there's Edgecombe and Bailey there for Washington at six?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And then you're going to have to choose between Ace and VJ at six. And yeah. Let the battles begin. let the Twitter arguing commence.
That's crazy. So you think the Johnson at three is not surprising to me at all. Like if Philadelphia wants a scorer and they kind of want someone that they can go with now versus a developmental guy, like sure, I understand Trey Johnson at three. Malawach at four, Charlotte is Mark Williams, right? Why do you think that they would really want that pairing?
Well, they just try to trade him, right?
True. It's true.
I mean, it's a reason they try to trade him because they know that his body can't hold up. So why not take the guy that's 18, 19 years old that has his athletic profile, physical profile, and you got him on a rookie deal for the next 4 years?
Sure. Yeah, I get it. That would be – and then Demon at five, I understand as well. Utah just like – they feel like they live in their own world. Like they definitely have – the craziest draft board imaginable. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see that, especially with him moving up boards. I don't know if he has a workout schedule with them, but that'd be pretty shocking. I mean, Edgecombe, Bailey at six, I don't know who I'd even go with. I know who you would go with.
Of course.
I think that'd be pretty split.
Although that would be a tough decision because I really like BJ. Like I love his 100%. Dog intensity on defense and his athletic pop. Like that dude, he has moments where he looks like Donovan Mitchell to me because it's just his raw athleticism. But I kind of compare more to like a Victor Oladipo. But yeah, he can play. That would be a tough decision. If it came down to that, I know Wiz fans would be happy as hell, but I think it would lead to a lot of arguments because you would have one side that's like, VJ's numbers look better, but then the other side of it's like Ace, his upside, he's 6'9", he is, you know.
So just watch a second of Ace and you'd be like, okay, I get it. I think I would lean towards VJ, at least at this part of the process. It's tough though, like you mentioned.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
That'd be ideal, I think. Like I think that'd be an ideal scenario for the Wiz. You get your option of who people think would go 3-4 and you're stuck there. You sit at six, you don't give up too much, anything really, and you get the choice. I think that'd be pretty it'd be surprising for sure.
It'd be crazy.
But I think that'd be a pretty good outcome for the Wiz. But again, I think we're going to wrap up the show here. Thank you so much, Damo, for coming on and sharing your draft knowledge. where can the listeners, where can the viewers find you and your stuff? Because it's great stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, I'm always on Twitter. That's at Damo8186. And then with my man Brennan on the Wizards of Gallery Place podcast, the link of that is in my Twitter bio. So you can check me out there.
Yeah, make sure. I've been on their pod a couple of times. It's always fun. Always listen to it as well. They have great takes, especially when it's draft season and I need someone to listen to. It's usually that pod. So thank you again for coming on, Damo. We're going to have a lot more draft stuff in the coming months. I mean, it's about a month away, a little less than a month until the NBA draft. 2 days now, so it's the 25th and 26th of June. But stay tuned for that. Obviously, on my channel, so you can follow Damo on Twitter as well. He'll be, you know, giving all of his draft stuff there as well as the pod. So make sure to follow him there. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Appreciate all you guys for tuning in and listening. Go Wiz.